Elisa, your website has you in a straitjacket. And in your new novel, After Birth, your main character, Ari, is a tormented young mother. Dare I ask, how are you?
I am fine. Thank you.
Yeah, the graphics on your website, I encourage our listeners to check out ElisaAlbert.com. Who did the graphics on your website?
My brilliant friend, the artist Orly Auslander, who has a great book out of her drawings called I Feel Bad, that actually has just been made into a new NBC show.
I encourage
everybody to check out.
Oh, how interesting. What a connection there. Okay.
She's wonderful, and her art is just, it touches my soul. She's a brilliant, brilliant woman. So I asked her to do some drawings for me, and she obliged. I was very happy.
Yeah, so all the pages there are, you know, this tormented writer, pen clenched in your teeth and exhausted. And this work, too, After Birth, it's got dark humor in it. What is it about that this tormented angst? What attracts you to that?
I guess I'm just not willing to kind of waste my time or the reader's time with kind of pretending that everything is all as it should be all the time, because that's not how life is. So I'm interested in looking at how and why and when and where things start to be challenging for people, and what contributes to that, and how we deal or don't deal, and sort of how that determines who we are in our lives.
So you're probably too young for this, but back when I had my babies, we had Dr. Spock. I don't know if his books are still around or not, but I was thinking, you know, if whatever that equivalent is that we give to young moms, maybe we should toss in your book too, just for brutal honesty. Give us a synopsis
for some.
Postpartum depression, I guess, would be a fair way to describe it. But your character...
I don't describe it that way, actually.
Okay.
No, it's something that gets brought up again and again in all kind of reviews, and it doesn't exist in the book itself at all, but people tend to really want to use that as kind of like a way to understand this character. I push against that because I actually think that this is a character who's having a very sane reaction to a very insane culture.
How would you describe it? Give our listeners a synopsis of your book so that they pick it up.
I see it as a story about a woman who is trying to find her way, and it's not always easy. It's not always neat. It's not always clean or easy. In fact, it's often very messy, and you definitely get your hands dirty when you're living it with this character. But, you know, to sort of tell a story in which everything is not hunky-dory and there are no easy answers, it's a struggle to find our way in life, and it's a struggle not to repeat some of the destructive things that we've maybe been handed by our forebears, but it's worthwhile struggle. And I think of this book as kind of a portrait of that struggle for this one person.
You're right, because every time that we talk about babies, it's all butterflies and little birds flying around, and everything's so sweet and delightful. But it is, it's very difficult, and it's very taxing.
We infantilize mothers as well, I think, in so doing. And if you're a thinking person who happens to also be a, you know, biologically female person, it can drive you pretty nuts, I think. Mm-hmm. And to sort of push against that and to carve your own path and to find a way to make sense of, you know, what your body's done, where you fit into this society, what this culture is asking of you versus what you know innately, intuitively to be right. It's hard work. It's messy, hard work. And I think we need like comrades in this struggle. And that's what happens in this book, is this character finds somebody, a friend who is able to throw her a kind of a lifeline.
So talk about that friendship between these two characters. Why is she so, and I'm thinking it's because she finds a character with brutal honesty.
Mm-hmm.
How does that friendship develop? What makes this kind of friendship between women very special?
Yeah, it's a unique it's a unique one and a precious one because there's no competitiveness and there's no lying and there's no phoniness and there's no, you know, high pitched like, how are you? I'm great. How are you? Yeah, everything's great. Like,
yeah.
It's a friendship in which both women are free and able to be authentic and to be real and to not have their shit absolutely together all the time and to not be in competition with each other and to not let each other's choices threaten one another for whatever reason. And, you know, they've sort of rediscovered the new normal, and they're also able to help each other raise their children, which is how most mammals raise their children. You know, humans are unique in trying to posit this idea that we should raise our young alone. That's not really how it works.
I'm not sure if it's humans or our particular culture. I know during some travels to other countries, they do tend to have a more it takes a village mm-hmm. approach, whether it's
right.
aunts and grandmothers and but several people, which makes a lot of sense.
Yes, it does for everybody.
Yeah,
it really behooves us all if we can stick to that model.
I'm wondering too about when you read the book. There's a certain distance between mother and baby. In fact, at times, that baby almost seems invisible or, like I said, at a distance, not named
yeah.
necessarily. The focus is definitely on the mother.
I think that another of the ideas in our culture that really harms everybody is the idea that babies can sort of fill space in our lives, like that a relationship with an infant is somehow going to like fill us when in fact infants are not capable of upholding their part of the bargain in that equation. You know, for a thinking person to be alone with a baby all day, day in, day out is a recipe for that thinking person to feel like he or she is losing their mind. And again, I don't call that postpartum depression. I call that a very sensible reaction to a very unnatural state. Mm-hmm. Babies can't fulfill us in the way that this culture seems to want to pretend they can. That's not their job. They're mute lumps of animate flesh, you know, for a long time, and taking good care of them and loving them is one thing, but pretending that like they are somehow, you know, good company is a little bit insane. So I think for these women to have each other's company while they're taking care of their babies and loving their babies and doing the work inherent in raising young children is this revolutionary thing. Like, oh, I'm still a thinking person. Oh, I still matter. My thoughts and feelings are real. I haven't like subverted my entire humanity to this role, you know?
I remember that shock, really, a certain culture shock when I had my children that I lost my identity and felt
right.
like even already during pregnancy that you feel like, well, I have to think about what I eat, what I drink. It's not just for me anymore. And then when that baby is born and takes over the nighttime and your sleep,
mm-hmm.
everything, I wonder
right.
if that we're doing a disfavor to women that we don't kind of give them a heads up on that.
I think so. I mean, you know, if you think about what it might have been like in other eras or in other parts of the world right now, when you maybe started having children when you were not maybe a quote unquote fully formed person yourself, you know, if maybe you're doing this when you're 16 years old and your expectations are a little different, you haven't been to college or graduate school, you haven't been sold this idea that like, oh, you're a person, you know, if you never had the idea that you were a person in the first place, maybe it's easier to subvert that whole idea down the road. But I think we have a recipe for disaster in this culture. If you're somebody who's been, you know, allowed to become a full person, and then that's sort of taken away from you, and you're expected to be an incubator, basically, or a kind of a mute caregiver, invisible and sort of discarded in favor of this, you know, precious new life. It's a really strange phenomenon we've got going on. And let us also not forget that sleep deprivation is the most effective form of torture known to mankind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's you know, waterboarding's got nothing on sleep deprivation. So add that into the mix, and, you know, a bad attitude is to be expected, I think. I don't think it's pathological if somebody's in kind of a bad mood, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think about our approach to young women? Should we, other than reading your novel, should we prepare them in a better way?
I think reading is a great place to start, yeah. I taught a class a couple years ago at Bennington College, all about, we called it the Toward a Postmodern Matriarchy. And we read Adrienne Rich, and we read Mary Wollstonecraft, we read Frankenstein, we read Grace Paley. We got really deep into a sort of a literature of motherhood and looking at how things have evolved over the last couple hundred years and where we're at now, how we got to this place. And, you know, where these things that we take for granted actually came from.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, things weren't always the way they are now. There are some really serious cultural forces that sort of got us here. And we should definitely use our brains to investigate and to ask ourselves what's worth keeping and what's worth discarding. How can we best serve ourselves? Not wait for, you know, society as a whole to serve us.
How do you think we, or did literature tell you that? How did we get to this point in our society that we expect women to go it alone so much? Like you said, in previous generations, usually grandparents, they might even be living in the same house. So have we done ourselves a disservice by putting our elderly elsewhere rather than having them?
That's a great point. That's a great point. I think there are parallels in the way we take care of our elders in this society and the way we take care of our very young, the way that a lot is sort of outsourced, the way that, like, a lot of the very physical matters, like taking care of bodies, is outsourced, and we're sort of estranged from the physical process of both birth and dying. And yeah, what that does to our conception of these things, our ideas about them, and our fear of them, I think it's all tied together really interesting ways.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about your journey to become a writer. I saw something about that you were already writing a column, Fat Albert, I think it was called, in high school.
Yeah.
So how did you come to be a writer? What got you interested in words?
Reading, absolutely. Always, always, always.
Certain authors that inspired you?
Oh, you know, I mean, I started really young and just kind of devoured whatever I could find. Read all the Judy Blumes, read all the...
Mm. She was one of those more honest children's writers, wasn't she?
She
Judy
was.
Blume. Yeah.
She did not condescend, yeah.
Did you already know at that point in high school that you were a columnist, that this is it, this is what I want to do?
I think I had dreams, I had hopes. I didn't know if it would be possible, but I knew that I felt sort of in my power in that realm.
Mm-hmm.
And Saul Bellow once said that a writer is a reader moved to emulation.
Mm.
And reading always seemed like a way that you could find out the truth for yourself. You know, you could investigate things for yourself and you could read what, and like no one could ever censor you if you had access to a library. You know, nobody could ever tell you what to think. You could find out for yourself what to think, and that seemed like the greatest power available to learn how to think for yourself.
And you also teach.
Mm-hmm.
What do you teach? Where?
I teach. Sometimes I teach creative writing, and sometimes I teach like literature seminars. Depending, I sort of go where I'm asked. The past few years, I've been at Bennington College in Vermont. I've taught in a few MFA programs, Columbia, College of St. Rose, in Albany, where I live. And sort of go where it's warm.
What are those important lessons that young aspiring writers, what do you teach them? What do they need to know?
I try to teach them to read and, to, you know, that whatever they want to know, anything they want to learn how to emulate, anything that they're trying to do, they can find examples of how that's been done. You know, there's nobody who can like give you some grand secret, like how to be a writer. You have mm-hmm. to kind of find out for yourself, like what kind of writer you are. And you, I think you find that out by reading. You find that out by devouring everything that turns you on. And, you know, you become your own unique writer by sort of finding a place where nobody's quite articulated what you have to articulate yet, you know?
So do you bring in any of that brutal honesty when you're talking to young writers about how difficult it can be?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. No use sugarcoating it.
Yeah. So you're going to be reading at the Gwen Frostick series. What can listeners expect?
I'm guessing I'll read from Afterbirth, although I have a new book in the works, and I'm sort of eager to try out bits and pieces of that. So maybe I'll read some new stuff as well. I'm looking forward to it. I've never been to Kalamazoo before.
Well, we're not big. We're certainly not as big as Albany, but we are rich in the arts. You'll find that there's a big audience here, both writers and readers, very interested in this kind of a thing. So tell us, you tantalize us a little bit there. Tell us about the new work.
I'm interested in looking at some of what's going on in this culture around assisted reproductive technology, how it's being used, how we're thinking about it culturally or not thinking mm-hmm. about it, as the case may be. So it centers around a woman who's trying to navigate that whole industry. And there's some darkness. There's some real darkness in that industry that I haven't seen explored the way that I would like it to be. So I'm trying to get into that and expose some of what people go through when they go through that system.
That seems to be your thing, Elisa, is going into those dark shadows and putting some light on them.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. Trying.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. We're looking forward to your reading and your visit to Kalamazoo.
Me too. Thank you. See you soon.